From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. I want to begin today by welcoming our new listeners on public radio station WSIU in Carbondale. As of this morning, The 21st Show can be heard on 7 NPR stations across the Prairie State. I also understand our partner station in the Quad Cities, WVIK, has moved its news and information programming, including The 21st Show, to a transmitter with greater reach across Northwest Illinois and even into Iowa and Wisconsin. So to our new listeners, welcome. Our name, The 21st Show, comes from the fact that Illinois was the 21st state to join the Union. We aim to be a place where Illinoisans and our neighbors come together to be informed, build connections, and seek understanding. We're also committed to making a show with people, not just about them. So we often take calls live, and even when we're not on air, we love hearing what you thought about our show. So email us, leave a voicemail, or get in touch on social media. You can find all of that and more on our website, 21stshow.org. That's 21stshow.org. Coming up in about a half hour, we'll be talking live with the new Illinois Teacher of the Year, Brianna Morales. But my first guest today is Congressman Mike Bost. He's a Republican from Murfreesboro in southern Illinois. He represents the 12th District, which covers roughly the bottom third of the state. According to the most recent census count, his district is overwhelmingly white, 88%. People who identify as Black and Latino make up just 8% of the population, with the rest being multiracial or from other minority groups. And although it's a largely rural area, the biggest employment categories are healthcare and social assistance, manufacturing, and retail trade. In order to make our schedules meet, I spoke with Congressman Bost last week on Friday morning. Because of that, we're not taking calls live, but as ever, let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. Congressman Bost, welcome to The 21st Show. Thank you for making the time to speak with us.
Thank you for having me on, Brian. I appreciate it.
So you recently visited the southern border, and we're talking about the border with Mexico, not Kentucky.
That's correct.
Did anything surprise you?
Surprise me? No, but seeing it firsthand really brought home the problems that exist there. I went for two reasons. One is I needed to be there to see the problems that we've been hearing about, to do it firsthand. But also as the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee, I went down and met with, majority of our Border Patrol agents are veterans, and we've got a program there now through a vet center that actually has opened two locations, one where they actually meet there in, at the Eagle Pass and Laredo areas. There's two outposts there, along with a mobile post. The reason being is we've seen an uptick in the amount of suicides among our border agents as this pressure has built so much. While I was there observing the facility where they check the illegal immigrants, they were down in their numbers, but let me explain what down in their numbers means. Down in their numbers because they were checking 300 to 600 through a day instead of 2,000 to 3,000 through a day. And the reason being is that was because of the river was up and was high, fast current. So they would relocate where they were doing their massive crossings instead of right there at the Eagle Pass crossing area. There's a constant problem there, though, and they knew that as soon as the water went down, that will continue. And they also know when the Title 42 goes away, the dangers of that sector being overrun again. The Del Rio sector, if you are there, you'll realize that actually a lot of the Trump border fence was put up, but there were no gates put in it before they stopped construction of it. Then the governor of Texas has now put containers along the Rio Grande, just off the bank of the Rio Grande, end to end. These are transport containers all along the Eagle Pass area, which will force anyone coming across has to go to one area to try to come through so that they can have some control. They actually also had to put Constantine wire on top of them because of the amount of people that were trying to climb over. Just the week before I got down there, there's a railroad trestle there as well, and that railroad trestle is monitored every day, but there was a train car, a tank, that they had locked a bunch of illegals in on the Mexican side, and they were going to open it when it got to the other side, and the train got delayed, and the heat actually killed several of them inside the train. So it's whether it is the fentanyl that's coming over and making every city in this nation a border town, or whether it is the human trafficking that's going on, the problem with the with all the gangs and the problems that exist there, and the sheer lack of controlling the border, the amount of gotaways that in that region alone are 123,000 a week. 123,000 a week known gotaways. How they know that? Well, they've got cameras. They don't have enough people to cover, and they come across so hard, so they have to count them as they go by the cameras, the ones they don't catch.
All right, so there's a lot to dig into there. Let me right. I mean, is this... I guess the big picture question here is, you talked about the fence, the border wall that former President Trump was trying to build, and then it gets halted when the Democrats come in. Is there any movement on a more comprehensive, rational approach to the many people who want to come here, who want to take jobs? And as you know, we're in an employment crisis in this country. I mean, a lot of people need more workers here. Why is there no rational resolution to be reached in Washington on this?
Mainly because the other side of the aisle wants just a free and open system instead of an organized, sensible, legal system. And this isn't a new problem, by the way. You do understand that Ronald Reagan had the same problem, and Tip O'Neill, and he worked out an agreement, and Tip said, if you'll give amnesty to our illegals that are here, then I will give you the money through the House to build, at that time, it was a controlled fence along the southern border. Ronald Reagan agreed to that. Tip O'Neill agreed to it. Ronald Reagan signed the bill that gave him the amnesty, and Tip O'Neill never put in the budget what was need to be done. Here we are this many years later, and we've got it even worse. And we've got it worse because of several reasons. Because we're broadcasting this open border, that's why we're having all of this crime. That's why we're getting people that, and I'm telling you, when Title 42 goes away, you will not even be able to recognize what's going on down there. It will be so bad. When talking with Border Patrol agents, they said there needs to be punishment for those who are coming here, people that could be sent back. See, you know, that doesn't mean that, and if we can control the border and we can put up a area where they can come through legally, we can do that. I'm all for anyone coming here legally. Because I've worked on legislation, you know, years ago we had what was known Goodlatch 1 and Goodlatch 2. That was the immigration reform that we tried to pass as Republicans, as House Republicans. But we couldn't get enough votes on either one to make that pass. That's why I thought we should have just made it one Goodlatch bill and done it that way. But that would have allowed for our farm visas, all those other visas to occur. It would allow touchback. So we are working on these things. The problem is it's such a political football that the other side doesn't want to put controls on the border. And we need to. We need to be sensible about this.
And just for listeners, you're referring to Title 42. Those are the COVID era restrictions.
That is correct.
Yeah,
the Title 42 allows us to return people that we do catch and return them to the list of countries. Now, we also should also work with Mexico to make sure they stay in Mexico policy. Because remember, the idea and intent is if someone is fleeing a country for safety reasons, then they are supposed to go to the first country they can find that will provide them with a opportunity for a free country that will opportunity for them to stay there. That would be Mexico if they're coming from the south. Instead, we have last year at that one Del Rio sector, there were 130 different countries that the people came across from. 130.
And the president has recently announced some new asylum restrictions that, I mean, some progressives in his own party are saying that they're more like former President Trump's policies. So he's getting it from both ends on this. Let's move on to another topic, though, in the time we have. I'm interested this week. You also voted in favor of the Republican budget proposal
you bet,
Washington.
You bet. Here's what it did. The facts are really clear on what it did. It returns spending to 2022 levels. It caps spending increases at 1% for each year that it's active. It recoups unspent COVID money, and it saves taxpayers $3 trillion or more. Now, that's not extreme. That's common sense.
Well, so you say it caps spending, but that's, I mean, a cap in spending in a time of inflation is basically a cut. And the
no,
Senate
it's not.
Democrat, well,
no,
Senate
it's
Demo-
not. A cap in spending during times of inflation is a cap in spending. It's not a cut. And see, that's the problem. Right now, the president keeps claiming things when he wouldn't come to the negotiating table. And one other thing that he claims, there's three things that they're claiming, that it cuts Social Security, that it cuts Medicare, and it cuts veterans, and it cuts none of them. It's very, very clear on that. And I, as the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee, will explain that to it in great detail and did on the House floor yesterday. And as well as the chairwoman of the Appropriations Committee has a letter in hand saying very clearly there will be no veterans cut, there will be no Medicaid cut or Medicare cut, and there will be no Social Security cuts. It is a sensible operation of this budget that we've got to get intact. And if we don't get it intact and don't sit down and work with the president and get him back to the negotiating tables, we're going to break the nation and China is going to own us. So for the sake of our children and grandchildren, we've got to get this done. Now, is that the final bill that's going to be there? I hope not. I think that what we're going to do is, but we had the president, along with Chuck Schumer, both saying, well, the Republicans in the House won't pass anything, and so we're just going to wait them out, and then we're going to drop the debt limit on them, and we want a clean debt limit, and then we're going to keep spending just as bad as we have. We've got to stop them from bad habits. And we're the only brakes on this train.
I just want to drill down. You mentioned Medicaid and Medicare, and I'm not sure if that was a slip or if you – maybe I just misunderstood.
It's Medicare, the federal.
Medicaid, okay.
Medicaid is state.
Yeah, so I did see the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services releasing estimates this week of how many people would be at risk of losing Medicaid coverage in every county. And I looked up some in your district, 8,700 in Jackson.
You do know they're a political tool, right?
Well, this is what I want to ask you about. But
okay,
they say
all right.
8,700 in Jackson County, 481 in Pope, more than 1,000 in Alexander. What is your message to those constituents?
What I just said, Medicare, Social Security, and veterans will not be cut.
This is Medicaid, though. This is assistance for the disabled, poor, and elderly.
I don't know how they're talking about cutting Medicaid, because Medicaid is not even under our it's under our control for a level, but that's the states. How would they say that this would have anything to do with Medicaid? I don't understand that.
Well, there's federal support for this.
There's
this
federal
is the
support,
expansion.
But that's not changing.
Hmm.
That's not changing this. We are looking at some work requirements and things like that we're talking about whenever we're moving the farm bill, but that has nothing to do with what this did. This is strictly pushing the president back to come to the negotiating tables so that he can do his job rather than sit back and just tell people that he's not going to do his job and negotiate. Every time that we've had a debt limit before, both Republicans and Democrats come together and work on a positive way to get through it. But look, I'm going to explain it this way. When any parent that has a child that they've sent off to college with a credit card, sometimes that young man or young woman, when they go to college and they get that first credit card, they run that limit out. But all of a sudden, the parents find out that the debt limit on that has been maxed out. Now, that doesn't mean you don't owe the debt. That's the same thing with our debt limit. It's been maxed out by overspending of the credit card. But that doesn't mean you send that student back to college and say, yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. You put some guidelines in place to calm it down. And that's basically what we're trying to get done here, is to calm this down. Because what caused the inflation that we have? It was that fifth COVID bill that we really didn't need, for one. And even though his own advisors was telling him, don't do this because you'll cause massive inflation. You do that, and you do the things that he's done on the on the fuel and the ability to permit and actually have fuel production in this nation, which caused the fuel prices to raise. All of these things, they simply changed not because they were bad policies. They changed them because they didn't like Trump and they were Trump's policies. Look, you can like Trump or you can hate Trump. I don't care. But what you need to understand is his policies were good. And we were booming up until the time COVID hit. And we need to go back to those policies. We need to get our spending under control. We need to go ahead and do everything we can to encourage growth inside our borders as far as the economy and putting people back to work. And we can use that money to pay that debt down. And if we move forward with the proposals that we've got right now, we can get that done. And I'd love to have the
Democrats back to work.
And the president come with us.
You said putting people back to work. We're at a time of record employment, though. And, you know, I do want to drill down. You mentioned that analogy of the college kid with the credit card.
Yeah.
The spending was bipartisan, though, right? Republicans and Democrats agreed on over many
everything
many past
except
Congresses.
The last COVID bill.
Yeah.
Everything
so, I mean,
but the last COVID bill.
The debt
there was
ceiling.
Not one single House member voted for that. Not one. There were Republican senators that voted for it. There were also Republican senators that voted for the infrastructure bill that only has about 40% that goes towards infrastructure, what true infrastructure is. And they voted for that. No House Republicans, there was a couple House Republicans voted for that.
All right. We are going to take a break on the program. When we come back, more with Congressman Mike Bost. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st Show. I am Brian Mackey. We are speaking today with Southern Illinois Congressman Mike Bost, and we also want to welcome our new listeners in the Southern Illinois region on WSIU today in Carbondale. Congressman, I want to ask about another bill that your office issued a press release touting your vote in favor of the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. I'm going to read from the press release here. It says the legislation, quote, clarifies that schools receiving federal education funding would be in violation of sex discrimination laws if they allow biological males to compete in athletics designated for females. Can you talk briefly in the time we have about your support for that?
You would have never thought we would have had to carry a bill like that in life. And especially for all of my friends that are both Democrat and Republican that supported Title IX. When Title IX was passed years ago, you know, the different feminist movements and different ones came out and said, you know, with this is why we need it. And I agreed with them why we needed Title IX. But now, everything that Title IX stood against is being overridden by the fact that people are wanting to not offend someone and say, hey, you're going through a gender change, but no, we're going to go ahead and let you compete in a sport against women that have been working their probably through their grade school and on up to try to compete in any sport that is designated for women, to try to come to the top of that ladder and to use that in whether to go to the Olympics or whether to get their college degrees with it, whether to all of these things that are out there for women now all of a sudden. Because I'm going to tell you this, if a woman gets caught in college sports taking enhancement hormones to strengthen herself at a level above her normal body structure, that is illegal and she's disqualified. You have a person going through the change like this, they already have that. They're not, and it proves out over and over again. And so why it is that we had to pass this bill, in any other time in my life, I would have never thought that we would even had to pass it. But now with what's going on and the frustration that these people that are in competition are feeling and what has happened, if you just listen to several of them that have been pushed out of the sport or are defeated in a sport that they've worked in all their life, that they were considered the number one contender, and then you have someone who's a biological male come in and compete against them, is totally a violation, I feel, of what Title IX was all about. Now, if you
so
want
the state
to
athletic
have
governing
an area,
body in Illinois,
if you want to have an area where transgenders compete against transgender, I'm all for it. You just that'd be great. But don't,
well, let me ask you, because the state governing body for this in Illinois, the IHSA, has a review process in place. Kids who want to compete in a gender that's different than the one they were born into, they have to apply. They have to document their medical and counseling evidence, and their potential physical advantages are taken into account. And after all that, in the last school year, there were 53 waivers granted out of something like 315,000 competitors. That's 0.017%. I'm curious why this is a problem that demands Congress overriding.
Because you're talking about one state here. We have several states, and we have several problems, and it was brought to us by the constituents and the concerns that we've seen, just like we do with any other piece of legislation. The concern we saw with this one is that Title IX, which is a federal program, we believe, and those of us who supported it, we believe that it is a strict violation of Title IX to have a biological male competing in women's sports. And that's what this says.
I know our time is running short here. I do want to ask you about the political landscape as we're heading into 2024. But before I do get to that, and this is the first time you and I have really had a chance to talk in several years.
Many years.
Since the last presidential election, I have asked every Republican office holder I talked to, who won the 2020 presidential election, and was it free and fair?
Let me say this. I don't question who the commander-in-chief is. The question is, was the and let me tell you that Joe Biden won the election, all right? I'm going to say that right now so that there's not any question on that. But I'm going to also say that you do know that I did not certify a couple states, but that was not because of election fraud. That was because the Constitution is very, very clear that the state legislature must put in place all the laws for governing the election process in their state. That's constitutional. Two of the ones that were filed against that I did not certify, one that was not the state legislature, but the governor set some new rules based on COVID. Another one, there was a board not approved by the state legislature that set the rules. Those two items were the reason I did not certify that. That being said, I'm not questioning that Joe Biden is the president. But when people say, well, there wasn't voter fraud, Ryan, both you and I are from Illinois. We know there's voter fraud. We've had voter fraud in Illinois our entire adult life, whether it's Chicago or East St. Louis. Matter of fact, if you remember the cycle before I was elected to Congress, we had East St. Louis had precincts that were voting 110 and 120% of the registered voters. And it was such a big deal that the State Board of Elections had to come in and actually purge the records and spent 2 years trying to straighten out the problems with the voter fraud there. So do I believe the voter fraud changed the results of the election? I don't think so, but there was voter fraud.
Big picture, this is after people had come into the Capitol building. I'm sure you and, you know, your colleagues, it was everybody I've talked to on all sides of the aisle.
Sure.
So that was a terrible moment, a terrible day. And, you know, people carrying handcuffs and spears and bear spray. And you know, your colleagues, Darren LaHood and Rodney Davis, did vote to certify the election. Big picture, it's not good for democracy, right? I mean,
But let me tell you what's really bad for a constitutional republic: not following the Constitution. That's bad for a constitutional republic. What I did and how I voted after my studies, and there were 128 of us that did some really hard studying. My vote was not made on the emotions of the event of the day. My vote was made on the Constitution, because that's where I raised my hand to do. I've raised it every time that I've served in the military, every time I gained a rank, every time I've been elected to any political office. I take a pledge to that Constitution. That Constitution is what set the governance of why we certify and if we certify. Now, I think it's funny, though, that we have been asked so many times, those of us that chose not to certify, but yet, do you know that on the Democrat side of the aisle, there's about 15 members that have never certified any Republicans since the year 2000? They refuse to certify. Nobody asks them any questions. They just choose not to certify. Me? I know good and well why I voted the way I voted. And, you know, my colleagues...
Sure, and those Democrats, it was not after the breach of the Capitol and such a...
Okay,
such a,
and I'm going to ask again. It's constitutional. It's constitutional. It's under... We're given that power under the Constitution. And I had to weigh out where the Constitution fell. Because I had several members that said, well, we're just supposed to rubber stamp that. No, it isn't supposed to be just a rubber stamp, because otherwise our forefathers would not have put that in the Constitution. And it was exactly for those reasons. And I'm going
to
tell you, a lot of people that are not say that I should have voted that not to certify on other states, which first off, they didn't do the paperwork to do it, but that they said you should stop the voter fraud. Well, no, voter fraud is something that has to be stopped by the individual states, because the states run their election. And so, you know, that's what and that's where I'm at, and I'm comfortable with where I voted for that, and will continue to be comfortable with it.
Are you endorsing anyone in the next presidential election?
I've already endorsed President Trump. Mm-hmm.
Closer to home, there are rumors that the Republican gubernatorial nominee here, Darren Bailey, will be challenging you in next year's
primary. I've heard
primary.
The rumors. You know, I will stand on my record. I will. I don't know whether he's going to or not. I will be continuing. I'm doing a good job, I feel like, one, representing the people of the Illinois 12th, and two, making sure that we have constituent service. You know, we've got three offices in the 34 counties that I represent, not counting the fact that each one of those counties are going to have office hours sometime in 12 months. Many of them will have them every week, and some of them will have them every month. But all of them will have them by the time the time's out, and we've got a good staff doing what we're supposed to do. And, you know, anytime there's it's not the first person that's ran against me over the last several years.
Congressman Mike Boss, thank you for taking the time to share your views.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.